When Charles Darwin finished his now famous book, The Origin of Species, he thought he had explained every clue but one. Though Darwin's theory could explain many facts, he knew there was a significant event in the history of life that his theory did not explain. Darwin's hope was that the evidence would arise later. But as of 2013, this fossil evidence has yet to be found. In his new book, Darwin's Doubt, Dr. Stephen C. Meyer tells the story of the mystery surrounding this explosion of animal life, presenting the theory of intelligent design, where features of the universe and of living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, and not by undirected random natural selection. For a limited time, you can pre-order Darwin's Doubt for 43% off the cover price.
43%!
Plus free shipping and 4 free digital books at darwinsdoubt.com. This offer will end soon and is only available at the website, so log on now to darwinsdoubt.com. That's darwinsdoubt.com.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is with the Jody Arias case over. And Ms. Arias now asking for the death penalty. I think sometimes you got to give people what they want, right? And with the Ariel Castro case not fully developed, but I'm sure that is going to be an American obsession for years to come. Maybe in between these things, it is appropriate to pay a little bit of attention to a case that is currently being debated by a jury. The case of Dr. Gosnell out in Philadelphia. And Kermit Gosnell, of course, was the late-term abortionist who was running literally a house of horrors. And one of the reasons we haven't talked about it a lot is to talk about it at all is to get into material that is so graphic and so gross and so disgusting that normal people, I've been particularly people out there who may be eating lunch right now, do not want to hear it. But the jury is deliberating, and they just asked, and this is a good sign for people like me who ardently wish for a conviction in this case. The jury has asked to rehear the testimony of one of his aides who's already pleaded guilty to 2 counts of third-degree murder. Her name is Linda Williams, at the abortion clinic in Philadelphia. So what does this have to do with basic philosophical problems at the very, very core of much of what is going wrong in America today? To talk about that, nobody better as part of our regular weekly science and culture update than John West. John is Dr. West is a associate director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute. He is a former college professor and he has a PhD in government. He is the author of the books Darwin Day in America, How Our Politics and Culture Have Been Dehumanized in the Name of Science, and Darwin's Conservatives, The Misguided Quest. John, thanks very much for coming in. How does the Gosnell case relate to this basic question of what is a human being?
Yeah. It's great being here with you, Michael. I think that it's part of a larger cultural shift of basically devaluing human life. And the shocking thing about the Gosnell trial is that people are still shocked by it when you actually consider there are so many other people making arguments basically justifying the sort of things that he did. I mean, they don't like the fact that women died in his clinic. They don't like that. But he was actually killing infants after they were born, and snipping, as he said, or stabbing their necks so to cut their spinal cord so they couldn't exist anymore.
And some of the testimony said that he made jokes about it, that he talked about, it's tough to talk about here. Yeah. He talked about one baby who was born, who was moving around and making noise, and he said, wow, that one's big enough, I could walk him down to the bus stop, and then proceeded to snip the spinal column.
And I think the tendency is to view Gosnell as such a monster that, well, we wouldn't be like that, and that he's just an aberration. But again, the really shocking thing is if you look just a few months ago, a Planned Parenthood official in Florida actually argued against an act that would have said that if a baby was born alive from an abortion, you have to offer medical attention. And they said, oh, that's something the doctor and the parent should decide after a baby is born, whether to allow them to live or not. This was a Planned Parenthood official in public testimony. We have people like Peter Singer at Princeton University, not a backwater, who's arguing that human newborns are of less value than, as he put it, a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee, and actually advocates that it's okay to commit infanticide.
And this is in his book, by the way, so this passed an editor. What he says is if the fetus does not have the same claim of life to life as a person, it appears that the newborn baby does not either, and the life of a newborn baby is of less value to it than the life of a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee is to the non-human animal. there it is. Now, he has one of the best endowed chairs in America. I think he gets paid about $400,000 a year to teach a new generation of students that a newborn baby, and he says up till 4 months old, a rock star Greg Tomlin actually found a soundbite of Dr. Singer on the Chris Hayes show, and he was talking about the fact that even newborn babies, in his opinion, are not people.
A person is a being with a rational substance. So the idea of rationality in some way comes into it. And I would say, therefore, that the best sense of a person is a being with some awareness, some rational awareness of who they are, existing beyond simply the physical organism.
That seems to me, though, to exclude a four-month-old baby.
Well, possibly.
Which seems problematic.
No, I don't think it's problematic to say that a four-month-old baby is not actually a person. I think that's simply true.
A four-month-old baby is not actually a person. What are the consequences? If we accept Dr. Singer's arguments, what are the consequences for society?
Well, then you start placing all sorts of limits and discriminating against all sorts of people. And the thing about Singer, again, people like to say he's an aberration. Last year, a medical ethics journal made the same argument. Now it's being called the right to a post-abortion abortion. They're actually giving the euphemism of killing babies who are born. And so the life is really, we lose the value and intrinsic value of human life, that human is special, and why it is. And we become the sort of society that I think we don't want to become, because I think people naturally at least know. I mean, I know when I looked at my babies, I have two children now, when I was in there, you know, had the privilege of being in the delivery room, and when they came out from my wife, I mean, I think anyone who's a parent who sees that and holds their baby in their hands realizes there is something intrinsically valuable and wonderful about human life. And when you see them grow and the interior potential that's there from the very beginning as they learn to speak and learn to be creative, I mean, to compare that to a pig, or some compare, you know, babies to a fish, or it's just outlandish. But the really horrible thing is this outlandish thing is being preached as science and as what the science shows to a new generation of people.
1-800-955-1776. There's and by the way, please call and join the conversation. If you think this whole tenor of this conversation is outrageous, that it is absolutely true that until you develop intelligence, you don't count as a human being until you get, oh, for instance, a bachelor's degree from college. Or if you're in a very high-performing family, a PhD, right, you don't count as a person, well, you can give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. There's a story today, John, and I couldn't believe it because it fits in so perfectly to what you're talking about these videos that a pro-life group called Live Action has found, and they're not contesting the accuracy of the videos. They're videos of Dr. Leroy Carhart, who's one of the most prominent abortion doctors in the country. And at one point, he describes the process that they go through with late-term abortions, where they actually put an injection in the womb to kill the baby before the abortion is actually performed. And he says that the baby in the womb, who's died after the injection, is softening up there like meat in a crock pot. And then, of course, they have all these people rushing and saying, well, he was trying to bring a little humor to a serious situation, et cetera, et cetera. The impact of this kind of thinking on firm in terms of public policy is what?
Well, we can see it over our past generation. It was the eugenics movement for decades, where we had tens of thousands of people who were forced sterilized against us. It's in abortion. It's you have millions of people who would be children taken away, even late-term abortions. And now you see it's the
euthanasia.
It's attack on infanticide of infants who are already born. And frankly, if you understand where these original ideas came from, it also ties into this idea that, say, now you're getting from the radical environmentalist movement. I want to qualify what I'm saying. I think we should protect and preserve the environment, and plants and animals are great. But there is this radical environmentalism today that actually thinks that human beings are a blight on the earth, and that plants, even, are more important than human beings. I mean,
we will get to that. We'll get to that with some of the statements by David Attenborough, acclaimed nature director. We're speaking with John West. He is the Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture Discovery Institute. If you want more information about John's fine books or about how you can get a copy of Stephen Meyer's outstanding book, a very important book, Darwin's Doubt, The Explosive Origin of Animal Life and the Case for Intelligent Design, it's posted up at our website under the Science and Culture Update banner at michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back with the view held by many that humanity is a scourge on the surface of the earth. That and more with John West of Discovery.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
This our weekly science and culture update with some of the outstanding scholars who are part of the Science and Culture Center at the Discovery Institute right here in Seattle. Dr. John West is Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture, and he is the author, most recently, of Darwin's Conservatives, The Misguided Quest. You can find out much more about the work of Discovery going to our website, to michaelmedved.com, and click on the Science and Culture banner. Talking a little bit about the Gosnell trial, the jury in the midst of deliberations, what's interesting to me is I've heard no one try to defend Dr. Gosnell. You see, I mean, it's just disgusting. I mean, the details of that case are, and I actually know people whose minds have been changed on the issue of unrestricted abortion. But then you have other people who are trying to defend people like Dr. Carhart, who was caught on these videos. He is someone who has made a point of, he believes, the moral necessity for performing very late-term abortions. And in fact, he's set up a new operation in Maryland because his previous operation in Nebraska would now be largely illegal with Nebraska law. But Tracy Weitz, who is a medical sociologist at University of California, San Francisco, said, doctors struggle to find terminology to help a client understand what's happening. And while it may seem wrong to us, it may be appropriate for that conversation. This for conversations like comparing a fetus in the womb softening up like meat in a crock pot, which probably is not what any pregnant woman would want to hear. At least, I would guess. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. We were speaking right before the break, John, about Sir David Attenborough, and I had mistakenly attributed his comments to his brother, older brother, Sir Richard Attenborough, the director of Gandhi. Sir David Attenborough, the younger brother, is also a film director, but he makes primarily nature programs, nature documentaries, right?
Yes, for BBC, Life on Earth, The Living Planet.
Yeah, but the Living Planet actually, in his view, gets ruined by human beings, yeah?
That's right. Earlier this year, he was in a little bit of hot water when he compared human beings to a plague on the Earth. because he thinks we were overrunning the Earth. This is part of the larger population control movement. He's involved in a group called the Optimum Population Trust, and the optimum is obviously not what we have now, in their view. And so they praise places like China with their forced abortion policy.
Wait, wait. You're telling me that Sir David Attenborough, national treasure in Britain as he's viewed, actually supports China's enforced one-child policy?
Well, the group that he's helps lead, the Optimum Population Trust, certainly does. I mean, I went back when he made his comments to their publications, and they had lots of different articles praising it. And actually, in one of the articles in this group that he helped lead, was saying that, well, what would you expect? This is just good social behavior. Like in America, we would, you know, the one-child policy sort of enforced by social shaming and by worse things. In America, we go out against embezzlers and other antisocial behavior. So they were comparing having more than one child to embezzling, other antisocial behavior.
So a baby is rightly seen as a crime.
A crime, a dead weight on humanity, something dragging us down. And again, the shocking thing here is that David Attenborough isn't just one outlier. There are lots of other people in America, college professors like Eric Pianca at the University of Texas, who actually advocates that we need to get rid of 90% of human beings. And he says that the government should tax and take away the income of anyone who has more than two children. This is at one of America's leading research institutions. Taxpayers pay his salary. In Texas.
Let's go to David in San Bernardino, California. David, you're on the Michael Medved Show with John West of Discovery Institute.
Well, thank you, Michael, for taking my call, and thanks for the guests for bringing up this topic. I was looking at the California Penal Code. It's a misdemeanor just to remove eggs from a nest in a public cemetery of any bird.
Wait. Only in a public cemetery?
This particular code section is just a public within any public cemetery.
Okay, do you have any idea why they would make a law in the California Penal Code about birds' nests in public cemeteries?
I honestly don't have an idea, unless they just don't want that kind of nuisance there. But there's other laws that pertain particularly to eagles and condors and not removing their nest anywhere. And so here we're taking, when your point you're raising with your guest is that we have a CMO culture that elevates plant rights and animal rights at a higher status and a higher being than the preborn children. And I think this is a good case of that.
That's exactly right. And in fact, you're right to point out, David, that the next wave is plant rights. Last year in the New York Times, Professor Michael Martyr from Spain, who's written books with Columbia University Press, again, not an outlier, wrote an op-ed for the New York Times arguing that we shouldn't eat peas because peas, I guess, communicate with each other, and so they should have personhood rights. Now, when I was a kid, I would have enjoyed that excuse for not eating my peas because I didn't particularly like them. But, I mean, it's hard to even, and so just how tragic it is, it's hard to lampoon this because these are serious people at places like Princeton, Yale, the New York Times that are promoting this sort of anti-human culture, but then actually extreme elevation of plants and lower animals.
Let me give you Al Gore would be an example, but one example that occurs to me is I used to be, when I was young and stupid, a huge enthusiast for George Bernard Shaw, and I read thousands of pages of Shaw, and of course he wrote thousands of pages. He was a complete freak on this idea of anti-vivisection. He didn't want any animals ever used for any experimentation, no animals used in laboratories. He was a very, very much a big animal rights guy.
Yes.
And yet he was a huge supporter of Joseph Stalin. When he died at A.O. Saint Laurent, he had a photograph of Stalin on his desk. And Stalin, of course, killed literally tens of millions of human beings.
And a supporter of eugenics and trying to breed, you know, superior human beings with using sort of Darwinian techniques. And so you're right. They sort of do go together. And I think it is interesting, as shocking as this is, to ask, where does this stuff come from?
And where does it come from? Where did it start? And how can we try to raise another generation with clear thinking so your kids don't grow up to be Peter Singers. We will be right back with John West of Discovery Institute and your calls.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
It's a little bit tougher to fix the materialist ideology that has taken such a fervent hold of academia and media and so many elements of American life, but that's the job of the Science and Culture Center, Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. The associate director of that center, my friend John West, is with us here. John, let's go directly to calls, and then we will get back to the origins of this materialist notion that peas and chimps and flies and spiders. Chris Christie in trouble for killing a spider. PETA yeah. said it was an execution. Let's go to Kent in Mill Creek, Washington. You're on the Medved Show.
Yeah, I just really don't see how anybody can dispute that, you know, there's going to be a critical mass of human population that's going to tip the planet over. I mean, even Rush Limbaugh coined the phrase peepolution, and that hypocrite today was talking about how, you know, there's record lows across the country, and somehow that's an affirmation that climate change or global warming in the past, which is the general trend, is not happening. Well, you know, Michael, here it's been record highs. It's been in the 90s. It's unusual, erratic weather. And they did.
Kent, just a little reality check. It hasn't been in the 90s. I mean, my wife wishes it would be, but go ahead.
In Washington, it has been.
In Eastern Washington. Yeah, yep. But Eastern Washington is another world. Okay, so
okay, but here's my other point.
Wait, Kent. Let me ask you a question. You mentioned Eastern Washington. Have you been over to that side of the state anytime recently?
There. Oh yeah, I was there for the last week. My family lives there.
You think it's overpopulated?
I think it's getting that way.
Come on! Are you kidding? You can drive for hours, and see nothing.
We know that China's a problem. We know, and conservatives and liberals alike know that it's an intuitive sense and it's a scientific fact that what happens if you eat your bowl of cereal? There's no cereal left. The planet is finite ecosystems. Okay,
the planet has a better ability to make more cereal than a cardboard box. John West.
Well, I think this is a classic exposition of part of the root of the matter, which is viewing human beings as a dead weight, not as a resource, not as a gift, but as a threat. And so you have to get rid of them. I think, you know, in many Western nations, including the United States, we're not having overpopulation. We're actually having the birth dearth. In fact, one of the reasons Social Security and other social programs are in long-term financial problem is that, in fact, we're not having enough babies. And in other cultures, if people have a stake in it and you have enough prosperity and freedom, they tend to limit their family growth without coercive measures. And so, you know, I think it's really interesting. This argument about overpopulation has been going on for decades and decades. It wasn't really driven by the facts. It was driven by an ideology that, in fact, predates World War II. Before World War II, it wasn't called population control. It was called eugenics. And in many cases, the same people who were the head of the eugenics groups then, after World War II, called it population control.
Kent, you still with us?
I'm here. I have one question for both of you. And this, so what in your mind is the number? 10 billion? 15 billion? Because it's going to continue to grow until there's a big crash.
Okay, Kent, even the United Nations disagrees with you. If you look at the UN, right, which is very much signed on, they predict that the rate of growth is already tapering off, and the growth is going to stop, and world population is going to fall at some point in the future. And they don't think that's a problem. I kind of do. I don't think there's a number. And Kent, let me make a suggestion to you. If you want to be open-minded on this at all, go click at our website on the Science and Culture banner. And we're going to put up on our website information about a terrific new book, which is called What to Expect When No One's Expecting by Jonathan Last, who's been a guest on this show a couple of times. You should read that. You should take a look at it. We do not have a population problem in the world today. And take a look at the book The Population Bomb, which was a bestseller 40 years ago. The book bombed. Everything it predicted didn't come true. What are we talking about? We'll get to that and more with John West of Discovery Institute.
Portions of The Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by The Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com. The Michael Medved Show, 1-800-955-1776. That's 1-800-955-1776. MichaelMedved.com.
44 minutes after the hour on The Michael Medved Show, speaking with Dr. John West. He is the Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute. And just one more reminder out there for folks who have ever thought, well, someday I'd like to go to Israel. I'd like to go for a visit. I'd like to see some of the sites in the Bible. I would like to see the miracle of modern-day Israel. I'd like to see firsthand the very real religious revival that is going on among the 80% of the Israeli population that's Jewish. We'll find out all about it. Talk to our folks and join us on our tour of Israel. We're going June 24th through July 2nd with an optional extension to Greece that Diane and the kids are going on. 800-213-8260. 800-213-8260. I'm going to be part of this tour every step of the way. Find out all about it, and I hope you will join us there. John West, I was just thinking of something because I was trying to deal with our last caller, Kent, from here in the state of Washington. And, okay, here's something that I don't fully understand. Is I think I know, I'm having read Richard Dawkins and lots of other, and Stephen Jay Gould and lots of other Darwinians, I think I understand the way they believe that natural selection works. Okay, how can they believe, believing as deeply as they do in natural selection, that population is going to be a long-term problem? In other words, wouldn't you think that Darwinism would sort of select out people for less fertility and the thing would take care of itself?
That's an excellent question. In fact, they would actually agree with that, but they would say that would not be compassionate. So in other words, you're right. In Darwinian terms, you would select that out. But their point is, and this was Darwin's own point in his book, The Descent of Man, we are so counteracting natural selection now by helping the poor, saving the sick, helping people that, as Darwin said, nature would have killed off, that that's what's going to destroy us. And really, that's the argument. David Attenborough, if you read his speeches, that's actually what he's talking about. He admits that if you just followed natural selection, that would have taken care of it, but we want to be compassionate. So they think, and I think there's some logic to this, they're being compassionate by arguing, well, let's do it scientifically because they know the better route, or at least the more pristine Darwinian route, would be just to allow natural selection to have sway. But they point out, as being civilized, we aren't doing that. So that's going to destroy us.
No, it seems to me it's deeply problematic, like a lot of the ideas are when you go over to that materialist side. The problem is, how have you heard anyone who is a committed materialist, in other words, that we're just a bunch of chemicals and we came into existence basically through random processes, and then when we go, etc. If you're a committed materialist, how do you argue against a Peter Singer? How do you argue against a David Attenborough?
Well, it's very hard, and especially, it's interesting, where do people like Peter Singer get this idea? It's not just me or you putting, you know, ideas into their heads or claiming that we know where they're getting it. Peter Singer has told us. He actually said in an interview a few years ago, all we are doing is catching up with Darwin. You know, he thought before that, we thought there was some magical line between us and them and that basically human beings were special. But now he said Darwin shows us otherwise. This is a constant refrain you find in many of these extreme, both animal rights people. This is where they say they're getting it. And so you're right. How do you argue in a Darwinian sense, you know, for human dignity and intrinsic human dignity? It's very hard. And in fact, I'd say you really can't.
Let's if you want to try, you can give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. Mike in San Diego, California. You're on the MedVed Show with John West.
Hey, Mr. MedVed. Hey, Mr. West. How are you guys today?
Very well, indeed.
Good. Listen, Mike, you asked a question earlier, you know, where do these ideas come from? And I think I have an answer for you, and I'm pretty sure you know where it comes from, too. And that is the idea that leftism is the progenitor of these ideas, that the leftist ideology, which I personally believe is an ideology of death and misery and perpetual aggrievement, spawns these ideas of materialism, that human beings don't have an intrinsic value outside of the within the womb or even barely outside of the womb, that this is the quintessential idea of where they get this from. This is the origin point, and this is why that this particular idea is so dangerous, not only to us. I mean, what would you expect in terms of materialism where you would say by compassion alone, Darwinism is being thwarted by humanity? Would you ask a mother who's looking at her child who may be developmentally challenged or may have some certain issues to simply abandon it to nature so nature can take its course? I mean, what would you do in that regard? That's not compassion. That's just simple human value. And I don't understand why these people hide behind academe to shield their ideas.
John West?
I think you raise an excellent point. I would broaden out, though. I think, unfortunately, it's not just the left. I mean, you have people like John Derbyshire, who for years wrote on Science Matters for National Review, who basically makes the same point as Peter Singer, that, as he said, the broad outlook on human nature implied by Darwinian ideas contradicts the notion of human exceptionalism, without which the Abrahamic religions lose their point. And so you actually, and then you have some conservatives arguing about intrinsic IQ values of other races being lower. So unfortunately, this sort of social Darwinism has infected both the left and the right. And I'd say the good news in all this is, in fact, the science on which they claim to base it is bogus. And increasingly, this idea that blind, undirected processes, that this is all we are, is actually being refuted by the science. And it's sort of undermining the very case that these people are championing.
Let's go quickly to Rudy in Los Angeles. Rudy, you're on the Michael Medved Show with John West.
Hi, John West.
Hey.
Hi, Rudy.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Yeah. To me, it's not that there are too many people in the world. There are too many people in concentrated areas like New York City, Tokyo, etc., where you literally become subhuman, in my opinion. And life becomes cheap and
Are you, as an Angeleno, calling the New Yorkers on the other side of the continent subhuman? Well, if that's the case, then wouldn't you expect the L.A. baseball teams to be doing better right now? Stay with us, Rudy. We will be right back on the question of whether big cities make people subhuman.
Portions of the Michael Medved Show are sponsored in part by the National...
Fifty-five minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, Rudy in Los Angeles thinks that we don't have so much an overall population problem as we do. People are too concentrated in a few big cities, and he mentioned subhuman life as he saw it in New York City. Rudy, we've got our oldest daughter has lived in New York for several years, and she kind of likes it. And there are a lot of people who live in New York City who enjoy it. Do you think they're crazy?
Well, I know they're crazy. I lived in New York City for about a year of my life, and it is subhuman. If I was in charge of the world, I would lop off 15 stories on every building in New York and make a moratorium. The difference between L.A. and New York City...
You're not in charge of the world. Yeah.
I know.
The difference between L.A. and New York City is?
You've got the entire county of Los Angeles located in about one-tenth the size of area, like in New York City. Everyone's stacked on top of each other.
And okay, but Rudy, do you, you understand, of course, that people are not compelled. It's not like Mayor Bloomberg has arrested people and dragged them into New York and held them there. The idea that people find something attractive and appealing about living in concentrated cities, that shouldn't be a surprise. Amy in Las Vegas, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. John West of Discovery Institute.
Hi, it's been nice listening to you. I just want to say that they did brain scans on animals, and that all mammals pretty much have identical brains. And that one of the smartest animals is the tiny little finch bird. They studied them in San Francisco, and where they lived in the wild in San Francisco, they learned on their own in the wild 12 languages in their first year. Greek, Vietnamese, you name it, they learned it. So animals can be very intelligent.
Who conducted these experiments on the finches?
Maybe Berkeley or somebody like that, but they were wild animals. I think it was actually somebody from Russia. That
a lot of very wonderful Russian experiments over the years. John West, you get the last word here.
I sort of wonder what some of the people were smoking when they did that example. Look, animals, I think, can be very intelligent. No animal that I know of has written a Shakespeare play or even a bad Pulp Fiction play. And so, I mean, there are vast differences. But I'd like to go back to, you know, this mentality is because people think that this Darwinian account, this reductionist account, is true. And in fact, the great news is, in fact, it's not. And I'd encourage people to look at new books like Steve Meyer's forthcoming Darwin's Doubt, which they can pre-order for a really steep discount.
And get almost half off, yeah. And it's just an outstanding book. Go to the website, and Stephen Meyer's Darwin's Doubt, The Explosive Origin of Animal Life and the Case for Intelligent Design. And look, even if you are very doubtful about the case for intelligent design, you've got to confront the evidence of what is called the Cambrian Explosion. How is it that all these new forms of life grew up all at once? That's what the fossil record said. It bothered Darwin. It ought to intrigue you. Go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and check out the really, really special pre-release discount for one of the most important books of the year. John West, so much appreciate your leadership and contributions to this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.